This episode is sponsored by ByHeart. Hold on, y'all. With all this talk about making babies that we love to do, let's talk for a second about feeding those little miracles when they come. ByHeart is an infant nutrition company that started with a simple mission: make the best formula in the world. When chest feeding isn't an option, ByHeart's clinically proven, easy-to-digest infant formula is there for you. Their patented protein blend gets closest to breast milk. Plus, ByHeart is made with certified clean ingredients and no soy, corn syrup, GMOs, or palm oil. And it's the only U.S.-made infant formula with globally sourced ingredients to use organic, grass-fed whole milk, not skim. ByHeart also happens to be clinically proven for easier digestion, less spit up, and softer poops versus a leading infant formula, which, trust me, you're gonna want. So tell me, you curious about ByHeart? Redeem your welcome offer at byheart.com/podcast with code QueerFam for a limited time. Additional terms and conditions apply. Right, y'all. I just want to take a quick second to talk about our sponsor, Sunbasket. I don't know if you know this about me, but I am not a big fan of grocery shopping or meal planning or anything that goes along with any of that. But I do very much care about eating healthy. But when you don't like to grocery shop or plan meals, it is really hard to cook healthy dinners for your family. And that's where Sunbasket comes in. They're a team of dietitians and chefs that design wholesome, nutritious, and delicious meal kits delivered to your door. Each week, you can choose from a brand new selection of quick and easy meal kit recipes with a wide variety of dietary options, plus dozens of snacks, salads, breakfast items, and more. And you can pick and choose from recipe options like vegetarian, Mediterranean, carb conscious, the list goes on. We just had orzo bowls with broccoli, sun-dried tomatoes, and pea stew, and it was delicious. My kids even liked them. I can't speak to Sunbasket more. I love them. Thanks to Sunbasket's commitments to clean ingredients and organic fresh produce, there's no easier way to eat your very, very best. You just have to go to sunbasket.com/queerfam today to save $120 across your first four deliveries. That's sunbasket.com/queerfam to save $120, y'all, across your first four deliveries, plus free shipping on your first order. Go do that. Get some healthy food. There you go. This episode is brought to you by KiwiCo, BetterHelp, and California Cryobank. Thank you for making our show a possibility.
Welcome to If These Ovaries Could Talk. I'm Jamie.
I'm Robin.
And we're your hosts.
We sure are. Love is love. If you don't have to make a family by taking a traditional ride. If these ovaries could talk, you would say. How do I get the sperm through custom?
I am a lesbian. So gay. We need to tell our story.
It's not your nuclear family anymore. It's not just your mom and dad thing.
We're not ruining these little humans.
Not for the gay reason. Just because we stick.
I just almost spit out my water. Oh my God, we're back, Jamie.
We're back.
I have to just tell our listeners that Jamie has a particular need and want to do that this episode is brought to you by at the very top. And today she's having a bad day. And I was like, Jamie, you do it. Because it's the first episode back. And she's like, whose turn is it? And she was trying to be so gracious. She was like, it's probably your turn.
I don't know why.
And I was like, you do it, Jamie.
I don't know why I like it so much. I really don't.
Maybe you feel like a radio announcer.
I guess because then every time I listen back to an episode and then I hear my voice come on, it's like so jarring for me and like, ew, that's so bad. But I still like
but
to
yet
do
you
it.
Fight for it every week. It's hilarious. Hi, everyone. Hi. We are back with season 8. Jamie.
Oh my God, that's crazy.
Season 8 of the podcast how did this happen?
I don't even know. But you keep listening, you keep tuning in, so thank you. We missed you.
We did. But speaking of, so me and my son were going out to breakfast the other day, and I was like, we were waiting on an outdoor seat, and then all of a sudden these two lesbians came up to us, and I thought maybe they were leaving, and we were going to go take their table, and then they were like, we're really huge fans of the podcast. And the best part, and like shout out to, was Kiki, and I believe Laura was her partner's name, but like shout out to them because my son was literally like lecturing me on how embarrassing I was. And then like halfway through the breakfast, he was like, I can't believe somebody recognized you.
You're so cool, Mom. No, really?
I know. Like for like 5 seconds, I was cool.
Oh my God.
Even though I was like greasy and in sweatpants.
Oh my God. That's amazing. I want to get recognized. You guys, if you see us on the street and you know it's us, you have no qualms about coming over and being like, oh my God, ovaries, ovaries. I will die. I'll take a picture with you. I can't.
You got recognized early on. Someone heard your voice and recognized you.
It was years ago.
Well, but that should sustain you.
No, but you know what else? What did just happen? We put both of these things up on our social, but I had this like cousin from long lost cousin that my mom's like, you have a cousin. So she reached out to me. She's in New York City. She's gay as well. So we met for a drink. And at first she was like talking to me and trying to act like she didn't really know my podcast or like, she was like, so what's your wife's name? Blah, blah, blah. And then after one drink in, it comes out that, oh no, she's been listening. And she was like, I told my friends that my gay friends that I was going to see this cousin that I've never met. And apparently she has some podcast about non-traditional families. And then her friend stopped her and was like, is it Jamie and Robin? Which is amazing. And then she told her hair cutter, who's also gay, and her hair cutter was
her
like,
hair cutter.
I'm the one.
I'm pretty sure hair cutter is not a word, but I like your commitment to it.
It was a haircut. She was like, I'm the one who told your friends about the podcast. I love Jamie and Rob. So anyway, I'm not trying to say that
Jamie, you are famous, but you just need the person to come up to you on the street. The same way you need to do the ad at the top of the show. We understand this about
you. If you recognize us, say hi. No biggie. Like when we get way too big, we might tell you to stop, but
when's that happening, Jamie? For me, that just means chunky, but that's fine. My gosh. Jamie, I'm refreshed and renewed. I mean, okay. I missed everybody, but I needed a mother loving break. COVID and going nonstop and like kids at home. Like, I don't know, but like these, like we took like a good 5 weeks off and I'm just like, I feel good.
It was good. It was great. It was a little too long for me. I was like, I need to get back in the studio. Like we go to a studio. I don't even know what I'm talking about, but it was long.
I need to get back into the desk in my bedroom and start recording.
And piss my family off because I make them be quiet. Yeah, it's always so fun. But no, I missed it. Oh, my I really face missed hurts. It. And I'm happy to be back.
I know we have like 3 episodes that we're recording, 2 tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And another one this weekend. So it's like we are jumping back into it.
And you guys,
we have a really good season, coming up. I mean,
it's
starting with today with Tristan. But
oh my God. First, well, let's talk about. First,
we have to give us a little special thanks.
Let's get the business out of the way. Well, it's not business. It's great. Gratitude. We have to say a huge thank you to our newest Patreon members.
Woo!
Yes. They are Evan Locke. And it could be Evan Lockie. I'm not sure.
Not Evan Lockie. You stop it.
There's an E on the end. And Teresa Khoury. It could be Khoury, but I think it's Khoury.
I would have said Khoury, but I like the fact that you did it with a faux British accent kind of covers you there.
Because there's 2 O's. Khoury. I think that's a really pretty name. Well, anyway, thank you, Evan and Teresa. You rock.
Yes.
Yes.
And if you all out there want to help us make content for LGBTQ families, because it's our passion and it's we love doing it, but we do need help. So you can join our Patreon community and that is going to really help us. And the good news is that while you are supporting making this content, you also get bonus content. And at the gestational carrier level, you get like video interviews of most our episodes and they are dropped a day early and without commercials.
I have to say,
and unedited.
You're so out of practice saying that.
That
was tough.
I struggled.
We were in a place where that just rolled off the tongue last season, but we'll get back there.
Well, all you have to do it is go to Patreon, as like Jamie likes me to say, patreon.com/ovariestalk.
Patreon.com.
And you can join us there.
Join us there. There's stuff there for you. Okay. All right.
Let's talk about our guest.
Oh my God. I love Tristan. Tristan
so much.
Is one of my new favorite people. And Tristan probably doesn't care what I think about him at all.
He doesn't. But he doesn't even a bit.
I absolutely love Tristan. And Tristan is so like... When he talks, like if you can watch the video of the interview, which you can get at Patreon, he's so expressive with his face. And I just love talking to him.
Oh, I know. And he's just like, he's like beautiful, soft and thoughtful in the way that he speaks. I loved him.
Yeah. So.
And funny AF too.
Funny AF, as the kids say. But
I feel like they don't say that, but I still say it.
Well, Tristan's story is absolutely beautiful.
Him and his husband became insta-parents. They ended up adopting, I think first fostering, then adoptering. Adoptering?
Adoptering.
Adopting.
You can say that.
Adoptering.
Listen, we make our own rules in this LGBTQ plus world.
Adopting his partner's sister's kids. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So that's just like 1 year into their relationship. And then they decided to have a baby. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. And they did it the easiest way possible. I wouldn't say easy. I'm not going to say it was
well,
easy.
Well, he said the cheapest way could do it naturally because Tristan's trans.
There you go.
And then they wrote a book about it called How We Do Family.
There's so much. We need to stop talking because we don't tell the story nearly as well as Tristan tells it. So,
and I don't know, Jamie, did Helen not get the memo that we were starting back to work this week? Because she's not here. Is she with you?
She's taking Rosh Hashanah off.
Oh, that's so okay. I mean, you should take Rosh Hashanah off if you're Jewish, but she's not. So.
Yeah, I don't know. I think she just takes whatever holiday off. She makes up holidays. Right. She's like, right. No, it's Women Who Smoke Day.
It's women who are 70 and smoke. Actually, she talks like this. Yeah,
that's more like it.
That's Helen. All right. Well, roll the tape.
Helen is not real. We don't have an assistant.
Stop telling people she's not real.
Because
you
don't think we're abusing this older woman. She's not real. She's not real.
Stop.
We just have to pretend we have someone who helps us.
Someone said,
nobody helps us.
Stop saying Helen is not real.
No,
someone said that in an email. We sure did.
We also got an email saying, oh my God, I thought you were abusing a woman.
That was your mother. All right. Roll the tape.
All right, Helen. Oh, she's not here. I'll roll it.
Hi, Tristan.
Hi, Tristan.
Hello. I'm so excited to chat with you all again.
I know.
It's so good to see you again. I mean, when we first met you, it was really lovely. We had no idea you were going to be such a lovely, lovely person. And so, you know, as soon as we got off that, so what was it we were doing? Because I never remember. We were on a panel. We were on a panel.
It was for gay parents to be. And yes. And we were like, wait. Tristan, are you the Tristan we're going to be interviewing? And you were like, yes, I am. And we were so excited.
So exciting.
Well, Tristan, we have to start with you where we always start, which is the elevator pitch. And the part I didn't tell you is that I'm going to put a little timer up on the screen, but it doesn't matter. Like you go over
matter.
The 30 seconds. We don't care.
We won't stop.
We like to at least try to like act like we have a format. So
it's all very professional what we do. Very. So you have 30 seconds to tell us who you are in a nutshell.
On your mark, Tristan, get set, go.
I'm Tristan Reese. I am a transgender man who is a parent. I have two adopted kids who came to live with me and my partner when they were 1 and 3 years old. They were my partner's niece and nephew. And then in 2017, I gave birth to my own child biologically because, as I said, I'm a transgender man. And he is now almost 4 years old. And I just wrote a book about it.
Bam!
Boom. Wow, how fast was that?
23 seconds, and it was chock full of story.
Like, so full. Oh, my God. Okay, well, this is going to be a fun conversation. Firstly, each of us has a son that's the same age. My son is 3 and a half.
Oh, it's so sweet. Yes, yeah. Leo's birthday is, like, in 2 weeks, basically, less than that.
Let's first talk, before we talk about you having a baby, let's talk about, like, becoming an adoptive parent. And, like, I'm assuming that might have come out of nowhere.
I mean, virtually, when a family is in distress, you know, it almost never comes out of nowhere, truly.
Right.
You know, and so we had some sense that things weren't ideal for our niece and nephew. And my partner and I had only been together for just a little over a year. And we've been in their lives. I mean, certainly since our daughter Haley was born, we actually took care of our son, Lucas. You know, he's now our son. He was our nephew at the time. We took care of him while his biological mother was giving birth to Haley. So we've been in their lives since the very beginning of our relationship. And certainly my partner's been in their lives for their entire lives. Mm-hmm. But things started to deteriorate in their housing situation pretty quickly. And so it happened sort of gradually and then suddenly that we became their parents. So we just got a phone call one day from a social worker saying, you know, listen, things have really deteriorated and I'm going to have to pull the kids. And I don't know I don't know that there will ever be a situation where they get to go back to their first family. And if there's a chance for you all to get them with the consent of their first family, now is the time for that to happen. Otherwise, it's likely you'll never see them again.
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
So how did you get it that they called you? Because I don't know, like, were you in touch with the social workers before?
Yes.
How do they know to call you?
Yeah. And, you know, my partner is a social worker, was a social worker at the time. Yeah. And there's a little bit of that, like, sort of professional courtesy. But yeah, we had not just called her, but gone in person to talk to her before to say, listen, these kids need help. This is not a safe living environment. And so we had opened that line of communication before, really to help try to mobilize resources to go to, you know, my partner's sister to get her the support that she needed to give them a more safe and healthy living situation. And the social worker at the time was like, listen, the systems are so broken in that county that she said, you know, until the kids are hospitalized with injuries from the parents, there's nothing that I can do.
Oh my God, that's horrible.
Yeah.
Oh my God. And so basically that's what ended up happening.
Something else happened that was not a hospitalization, but was like, oh no. And so she was like, well, okay, we're there. You know, she called us and said, we're there. It's Friday. We're coming on Monday. And the best options, the best option for you all is to see if, you know, if she'll give them to you for a little bit and just get a break and maybe she'll be able to get back on her feet and I'll try to support her on my end. You just look out for the kids for a little bit. I'll come down to LA, inspect your house, interview you all in a couple of weeks, make sure everything's okay. And, you know, then over the course of 3 years, it became clear that, you know, my partner's sister just wasn't ever going to happen.
Oh, that's heartbreaking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And in 2016, we adopted them legally.
Oh, well, thank God for that. But like, were you in touch with the sister? Like, were you all, I mean, I don't want to get too much into your family dynamics. If it's too personal, please.
If we, if we ask, if we go too far, you tell us.
Yeah.
Please, oh, Tristan. I have no problem saying no. So don't worry about that.
I got that sense of that. I like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, we really tried. We really wanted to find a way to make it work. But, you know, even before we came along, there were times when she would leave the kids with other family members, some of whom were not safe people, and then just disappear, you know, for a whole weekend or for a whole week and then sort of just show back up. And so it was really difficult for her to try and manage, like buying a bus ticket, taking the bus down to LA to visit them. And at that point, it was like they were toddlers. To load them up into a car and take them 2 hours up to visit her, not knowing like they can't go back to the house where they had been abused, right? So then you have to find a neutral place. And even for her to get to the playground or something, it was really, really hard for her.
Yeah.
And it was hard for us already to be parenting these two kids to also try to take on the responsibility of picking her up and then taking them somewhere. And then she just wouldn't show. And that's really, really devastating for the kids. And so then we had to learn like, oh, you can't actually tell them, oh, you get to visit your mom today. Cause what if she doesn't show up? How gutting is that for a 3-year-old?
Right.
You know? And so we just had to learn all these lessons so quickly, you know? And for us, we're like, if you want to see your kids, like, it's not that hard. Just like pay $12 and hop on a bus. We'll pick you up at the bus station.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we would go to the Greyhound station and she just wouldn't be there. And she'd be like, oh, I got on the wrong bus or I missed it. Or can you wait 4 hours? That's when the next bus comes. It's like, no, we can't.
Yeah.
We have two toddlers screaming in the back seat. And oh no, now the 1-year-old's asleep again. That's a second nap. So that throws off the whole day. No.
Oh, now you're up all night. Forget it.
Yep. And so we tried so hard. We tried so hard. And it was that constant mix of like, how much, like, when do you invest and when do you divest?
Yeah.
You know, like, when do you really try to make something work? And when do you try to find a way to make it not work and to have the kids survive without these visits?
Yeah.
Or it was just so, so hectic. And my partner and I really disagreed on how to approach the situation and how much to invest and how much to divest. And then there was legal stuff. It was just chaos.
Robin?
Yeah.
It is time to get crack-a-lackin'. Yes, I said crack-a-lackin'. Because you know what? Summer is over and work might be picking up for some parents. I know it's going to be picking up for me and you. Mm. And parents might be looking for ways to spend more quality time with their kids, right? Because we're working.
So true, Jamie. Enter KiwiCo.
Oh, I love KiwiCo. I think all parents are going to love this. These subscription boxes create hours of fun for your naturally curious and creative babies and toddlers. Listen, guys, with a Panda Crate subscription from KiwiCo, your baby will receive a new crate filled with 2 months worth of products and content.
What?
I know. Every other month, right? So whether you have a brand new newborn or a trailblazing toddler, the Panda Crate is perfect for your little one's developing brain. Everybody.
Oh my God. This. We got the Panda Crate and I have these friends, Paige and Shimmy, who have a baby who's about 6 months old. And the box was so cool. We did this unboxing. We put the video up on our social last week, but it had a book in there that was like, look, it was like plasticky and it looked black and white, but then it's in the water and it turned to color. Ooh. And it had those little squares. Wares that have the texture that the babies love, to like that crinkly sound, mm-hmm. and some of the teething ring type stuff with a little knot on it. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could just see the baby being so excited when we unboxed it with her. And, mm-hmm. and she was just like grabbing for the rings right away. That is growth, Jamie.
It is. Engaged. Mm-hmm. That's what we mm-hmm. want. We want these mm-hmm. little guys to be engaged, right? It's designed just for infants and toddlers. The Panda Crate is grounded in the study of early childhood development in a way that's made helpful, practical, and convenient for parents.
Amazing. Yeah, and every crate, it comes with a magazine and an activity card, and it's featuring research-backed content and activities to nurture your little ones, Jamie. And it's all shipped to your door, and there's no commitment. So you can pause or cancel anytime. I'm loving mm-hmm. all of this.
All right, guys. So build a foundation for early learning with Panda Crate from KiwiCo. Get 50% off your first month plus free shipping with code OCT at KiwiCo.com.
You're going to get 50% off your first month at KIWICO.com and use that promo code OCT.
OCT. Everybody wants this. Engage your kids.
What was that like? Like you two not coming at it from the same place?
Yeah. I mean, you have to understand, for me, my only investment was the kids. Mm-hmm. And for my partner, you know, it's like he really felt like, well, that's my sister. And like, however I can support her to make this work, like, that's what I want to do. And my partner basically raised his younger sisters. And so for him, it was a little bit like his other kid was failing.
Yeah.
And how do we support her? You know? And so, and for me, I was like, look, there's no way this is ever going to work. We need to find a way to build, to be a family, accepting that she's not going to be around. She can't manage this. She wasn't able to manage it. And why wasn't she? And so I had like lots of judgment about that. Sure. And that's, you know, that's a big part of the book too, is when you and your partner are really at a crossroads because your values are diverging. Mm. My mm-hmm. value being safety. Like I just wanted to keep the kids safe. And that includes from heartbreak.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's like, you guys had to work through this in real time because you had only been together
a year.
And then I feel like, correct me if I'm wrong, this was kind of sprung on you and it was like, all right, well, we're taking these children, no question. But now you're
an insta family with two kids. Yeah,
walk through that. Like you'd only been together a year.
Yeah. And so we hadn't had any time to think through like, oh, like what might our philosophies on parenting be? Like mm-hmm. what happened in your child that you love and want to keep? Like what happened in your childhood that you're like, I like want to take parts of that, but like evolve them a little bit. And then what things do you want to dump,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And the same for me, like what did my parents do that I think worked? Like, what do I want to keep? What do I want to change? What do I want to drop? Mm-hmm. We didn't have time to do any of that. And we're trying to do it in real time with all of these other inputs coming in.
Yeah.
You know, like, okay, well, what does my sister say is like the best way to raise kids? And then is that realistic for us? Like, do we think that's a good idea? Like it was just a shit show, if I'm allowed to say that.
Yes, you are.
Yeah, you could say whatever
Please
you want.
Do.
But it's also, it's very different from, you know, most of the couples we interview, LGBTQ plus couples who are starting this baby making process or who have made their babies. There's so much thought that gets put into every single little decision because we have to plan these things out. But in your case, you didn't get that opportunity at all. So it's a very different story, very different story.
And you didn't just start off with one kid. You started off with two kids. So you don't even know what it's like to just have that one kid. You just had two.
No, even like a typical, I think, heterosexual couple, if there is such a thing as a typical, any kind of couple, mm-hmm. like at least, I mean, if they have an oops baby, at least you have 9 months to kind of hash things out.
Right,
we didn't have
right.
that at all. We didn't have that. We had like the 2.5 hours drive mm-hmm. from LA to Bakersfield and that was it.
Right.
Yeah. And obviously it's not just how to parent these kids, which again, even if you adopt and you're like have a kid or even two kids foisted upon you, you still like went through all that process of applying and thinking exactly. through and you go to the classes and you understand, you know, if there's like fetal alcohol syndrome, or if there's PTSD, or if there's attachment issues, like you go through those classes. We didn't have any of that.
Yeah,
so yeah, like 0 out of 5 stars, do not recommend.
Yeah, because you're a family member, so you get, they do give preference to family members, right? They open it up to family members first. Is that true?
Yeah, we were technically considered an emergency family placement.
Right. Okay. So in instances like that, in those particular instances, us LGBTQ folks can have babies hoisted upon us, which is a blessing and a curse in its own way.
Yeah. I mean, well, it's a challenge. And of course, they have no regrets,
Of course not.
And it would have been great if I could have had some more opportunities to plan ahead for that. And it's not uncommon.
Yeah.
You know, LGBTQ people, we are often the ones who step up when the other systems don't work.
That is,
you know,
so
we are
true.
Often the ones who don't already have kids, you know, and have tried to figure it out how to build our own lives. You know, it's not like, you know, my partner's sister didn't have other siblings, but one of them already had multiple other kids and in her own unhealthy situation, which she has mm-hmm. since gotten out of. And yeah, so it's not uncommon that the queer folks step up.
Isn't it? It's so funny that we're the ones that show up and want to do the work and want to help. And yet they're trying to make laws to make us not be able to help. And it's just like, you'd rather that a kid goes into a broken system, like horrible group home or some kind of like a bad situation, rather than let that kid be raised by two loving parents that happen to be part of the LGBTQ community. It's insanity.
100%. And there was even a time, a couple of months before we got the phone call, where we had talked to a lawyer in their county and just said, like, do we have any options? Like, if things fall apart, like, can we petition the courts for guardianship? If we don't get a phone call, if we're able to prove abuse, like, what are the options? And he literally said, in this county, the judges would rather the kids be in a home with active meth addiction and abuse than in a healthy, loving, happy home with two men.
Isn't that insanity?
Oh my God.
He's like, you don't stand a chance in hell.
Wow. Where is that? That's in LA?
No, just north of LA. Okay. In one of the conservative,
okay. I was going to say.
Yeah. And I'm from, you know, I'm not from Kern County. I'm from the Antelope Valley, which is technically LA County, but just barely.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, those people think, oh, California is some liberal mecca. No, it's got like 4 liberal pockets. And then everything else is extremely conservative.
Yeah.
Oregon's the same way. Washington's the same way.
Yeah.
There's a lot of, yeah.
Look at those counties that are trying to secede from Oregon right now to go into, was it Idaho? I think it's in Idaho.
Yeah, there's one pocket that I know of in Idaho, which is Boise. And even that is a little, it's no Portland. But yeah, I mean, that's where most liberal places in the U.S. are. They're surrounded still by like little blue pockets, surrounded by red deserts.
Yeah,
I know. It's scary. It's scary for us. It's scary for our community. And it's scary that you almost possibly didn't get these children. That's the real tragedy right there. Luckily,
you did.
They're with you. And how many years ago was this? How old are they now?
Yeah, I mean, we're in September of this year, we will celebrate our 10th Chapel of Family Day, which is our day when we do something special with them that we wouldn't normally do. And we tell their story again, and they can ask us any new questions they have at this, however they've leveled up maturity-wise and intellectually over the past year. What new questions do they have? They can always ask us questions, of course, but it's always helpful to have some time set aside to be like, so let's, you know, we'll tell you our story, our family story again. And what new questions do you have? And you know, we always promise that we're going to be honest, but we try to also be as developmentally appropriate as possible, you know, because there's not.
Don't give more than the kids ask for.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. But keep dropping those seeds so that they pick it up when they're ready. It is so important to be so intentional. When did you guys start this whole tradition?
I think from the first year, I think on that September, I came up with this idea, or maybe I heard of it from somewhere else. I just don't remember what it was, but I just really thought one of the things that I've learned myself being a queer person, being a trans person, is like how you tell your story is more important than the story itself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how you tell your story to yourself. Are you a victim? Are you a survivor? Mm. You know, did things happen to you, or like, did you build resilience to things? And so I wanted as early as possible to have them feel like they own their story. And again, thinking about like how powerful it is for kids to feel like they were loved.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Chosen.
And so that they didn't get stuck in this narrative that like, oh, someone didn't love me and that's why I ended up here. But instead to be like, you were so loved that there were lots of people who were ready.
And we, what Robin just said, and we chose you. Yeah. Yeah. How powerful is that? Flip the narrative.
Yeah.
I love it. And how old are they now?
10 and 13.
Wow. 13.
So do they remember before?
The 10-year-old does not, although there are some imprints there that we continue to work on and we'll probably work on forever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, those first years are more important than I think we've ever really understood as sort of modern parents.
Yes.
They feel a little bit like they're sort of like little prototypes of that. They're like little beta versions, but no, that's the way that our brains are forming from in utero really sets a blueprint for the rest of all of our lives.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, you know, they certainly don't, the 10-year-old doesn't remember anything, but there are some imprints there that are troubling. And the 13-year-old thinks he does, but there's no way he can, but it's more like a memory of a memory of a memory.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And is she involved at all in life or do you guys see her at all or?
Not at all. And that was always part of our conversations. It was also part of the adoption agreement is, you know, any time that she can be a positive part of their lives, we want that for them. Mm-hmm. We want that for her. And she just hasn't been able to meet that bar yet. And she has gone on to have three more kids, one of whom was also taken away.
Oh.
I think, you know, what we wish for her is that she's able to give the two kids that are still with her a really wonderful life.
Yeah.
And we really hope that she has the supports to do that now. And whenever the kids are ready, you know, to have a relationship with her, even if she isn't able to do it in a healthy way, that's great. Maybe as they get older and they're able to hold that. But even for now, as young as they are, you know, we have lots of friends who are foster kids. We have lots of friends who are adopted and we know all the ways it can go. And, and we don't think that either of them yet are ready for it not going well and for them being able to survive it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So we're gonna wait.
That's good. Mm-hmm. That's so
makes perfect.
Yeah.
Sense.
That's so great.
And once again, so intentional.
Yes.
So intentional and so loving and so caring.
Okay, folks. Get your pens out because we're about to give you something really special.
Yeah, OCT. Write that down. It's because it's our code for a free sperm bank subscription, guys. OCT for Ovaries Could Talk. But you already know that because you listen to this podcast.
Yes. And we are giving you a free level 2 donor information subscription access for 90 days to California Cryobank. I mean, that is the same bank that Jamie and I use.
I know. Amazing.
And many other folks besides
us. It's a great bank. I love the bank.
Yeah.
And this subscription, you guys, is worth $145. And it gives you access to extended donor profiles, childhood photos, and adult photos for some of the donors. Dun, dun, dun. And it gives you access to their medical histories. You can read personal essays they've written, which I personally loved. And it's a really great value. It's great.
Yeah. And they're so like particular about who they choose. Less than 1% of donor applicants actually become donors for California Cryo. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's their screening process.
It's stringent.
They do multiple specimen quality assessments, tests for infectious disease. They give physicals, do genetic screening, evaluation of personal and family medical history, comprehensive psychological screening, a criminal background check. And they even have what they call DNA advantage donors. And these donors have had expanded genetic carrier screenings and have been screened for over 260 plus different genetic conditions. I mean, in case you're worried about a particular genetic situation or condition.
Which you might be. And so they really cover all the bases. It's a great bank. I love it. And they partner with LGBTQ plus organizations to sponsor family building events around the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And they also created a special discounted fertility preservation program for the transgender community. This is a good bank.
Love it.
It can help give the opportunity to have biological children after transitioning. Come on.
I mean, they are not messing around, Jamie. And if any of you out there are looking for donor sperm, just go to cryobank.com and you're going to open a free account and you're going to use the code OCT and that's going to activate your free subscription today.
That's cryobank.com, cryobank.com. Get those babies. That's weird.
That was definitely weird. How did you go from, like, that was a lot to being like, And now I'd also like to have a baby.
Yeah. How did we get there?
I mean, good question. But, you know, really, it was like we went from the huge chaos and the multi-year chaos of filing for emergency guardianship and then permanent guardianship and then termination of parental rights and then formal adoption. Like, we went through all of those things and being stalked and threatened and all of this chaos. And then things died down and they were a little bit more normal. The kids were getting a little bit older. We finally had them in school. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to be honest, for me, it was a little bit of a spiritual thing. You know, I had had dreams of a baby early on in our relationship. And that door kind of closed when the kids were, you know, when we ended up with them on our doorstep, kind of basically. And then as things settled down, you know, I felt a calling that there was another child that wanted to be born to our family. Mm-hmm. And I sort of looked at the numbers and thought about my own biology, my partner's biology. Did we want to have a really big age spread? Did we want to adopt again? And for me, the adopting again was not an option. To go through that level of crisis again was not something that we could see ourselves doing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which is it's good to know that too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like we paid our dues. We did that. Again, no regrets, but it just it was really hard. It was going to be way, 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 way easier to just DIY it ourselves and to have a biological child.
You say that because I don't know if it's that easy for you to take the route that you took. Actually, like,
yeah,
I mean, emotionally, because mm-hmm. we've spoken to many trans men who have gone the route you went and trying to get pregnant and going off the hormones and was extremely hard for them. So, but everybody's different, of course. So,
yeah, what was that like for you?
Yeah, none of these paths are easy.
Yeah, none are easy. None are really straightforward, but this ended up being the most straightforward, easy path of all of the paths available to us. And so I did. I just pitched the idea to my partner. I just said, hey, what do you think about us having a baby? And, you know, he was like, fuck no. This is the dumbest idea you have ever had. And that's saying a lot because I've had a lot of dumb ideas.
I did not think that's where you were going. I love that is where you went.
And then finally, you know, and when we talked about it, you know, and of course he walked about it immediately. He was like, no, I'm so sorry. If you really want to do this, like, of course I'll consider it, but no. And so we did, we hashed it out for a while back and forth. Well, what about this? Well, what about that? You know, I really want to do this. And then a very wise friend of mine suggested a moratorium, was like, you know, just like stop talking about it for a while. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, let him talk to his people. You do your thing. Like, don't keep hashing and rehashing because then it'll become like a capital T thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like the cat. That was our other thing in the house. Like, I didn't want a cat. The kids and Biff wanted a cat. And then it became like a thing.
Yeah.
And then they tell the strangers. They're like, and this is my dad and he won't let us get a cat.
Yes. Yes.
So we did a moratorium. And then, you know, he finally did come to me and was like, you know what? Like, basically, you like trusted me enough to like welcome these kids from my family into our family. Mm-hmm. And like, you've stuck with me through this whole time. And like, I do trust you. And if you think this is an adventure that we should have, then like, let's do it. And obviously it was much bumpier than that. That's why I wrote a whole book, but right.
Yeah, we're going to have to we're going to have to dig in.
I'm wondering.
It's not easy.
Yeah.
It's not easy.
And I'm wondering, did you consider surrogacy or were you like, I want to carry?
Oh, we don't have $100,000 laying around. Are you kidding me?
Exactly. Right. Like, so the decision was made for you based on monetary.
Yeah. I mean, just finances. And mm-hmm. and to be honest, like even, I mean, both of my sisters were like, I'll carry the baby for you. But even then, even if I'm not paying a surrogate, we're still talking probably 50K.
At least. Probably more.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. For egg harvesting. I mean, all the things.
Oh, and all the legal paperwork you would have had to have done and all that. Yeah. Okay. So you were like, we're going to try this way.
Yeah. And we both agreed that I would just stop taking testosterone and that we would basically like remove the barriers to pregnancy. And like, mm-hmm. if a baby metaphorically walked through the door, great. If not, we decided we weren't going to do anything extra. So like, we weren't going to go in for fertility treatments. It was just like, we set a date. We said, we'll try for 6 months. And if it happens, it was like, I don't know, meant to be or something. And mm-hmm. if not, that's okay. Like, we're not going to have this be the new thing that we're like really trying for. We're just going to like close the door. I'll go back on testosterone and be happy with the kids we have. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I just stopped taking my testosterone and I got pregnant and then I had a baby.
Shut up. Amazing.
I have so many questions because I'm like, you didn't have to see an RE or anything. You were just like,
nothing.
And you weren't, were you worried about like what the state of the eggs might have been of your egg, or you were just like, we're just going to see.
Well, no, I did a lot of research mm-hmm. and there's a ton of research mm-hmm. on fertility, testosterone, egg quality and quantity. And yeah. all of the data says that testosterone just like impacts a totally different system and doesn't hurt the eggs in any way, shape or form.
That's actually what we just learned on
last season
where we had a doctor come on, Dr. Mark Lynn from UCSF, who is the head of transgender fertility. And she basically said just that. And she said, there's even more studies coming out now. And there's so much more coming out. But yes, it looks like testosterone does not affect egg quality or egg numbers.
Yeah. Doctors won't say that. You. Yeah, that's right. Doctors won't say that because they're so precise. My dad's a doctor, so I feel like I can pick on them a little bit. They're like, well, we need more research, but that's and I'm like, how much said. More
but
research
early
do we
indicators
need?
Indicators are saying
we have that's like 24 said. Studies. Like, what else do you need? Yeah. But the reality yeah. is, no matter how much data exists, doctors will never right. tell you testosterone does not impact fertility over the long term. Yeah. They're just not going to say that because it's not part of how science works. There are no absolutes, right?
Right.
We've gathered information, we've drawn a conclusion. It's not the conclusion. And I'm mm-hmm. like, I mean, come on. mm-hmm. Come on.
And so you went off tea. And mm-hmm. how long had you been on testosterone before you went off of it?
Like 15 years.
Okay, so that's a long time. I mean, that's a good amount of time. And you yeah. are embodying your true physical self. So going off the T, how was that?
The physically, it wasn't hard for me at all. And, you know, the data shows that about a third of all the trans people in this, at least one particular study, about a third did find that going off of testosterone and getting pregnant was pretty psychologically difficult, right?
Right,
so dysphoria
right.
is the word that we use, that mm-hmm, feeling of discomfort mm-hmm. with your body, that it does get worse. About a third find that it stays the same, and about a third find that the dysphoria actually lessens or even goes away completely throughout a pregnancy process.
Really? This is new. This is news for me. I don't know about you, Robin. That's new. I haven't heard those statistics.
Yeah. And it's actually from a study that comes out of UCSF about the pregnancy and the medical experiences of trans people who've had babies. Mm-hmm. And I always like to throw that statistic out there because sometimes there's a myth that like every trans person is going to hate
right.
going off of hormones and getting pregnant. Mm-hmm. And what that does, unfortunately, is I get DMs on Instagram and Facebook from trans people who are like, I actually like being pregnant. Does that mean I'm not really trans?
Oh.
And I have to be like, no, not at all. This is a thing that happens. Like 1 in 3 trans people have this thing where they're like, oh, I used to hate X body part, but now it's being used to grow a human. Like, this is awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or like, you know, I used to like hate my chest and now like it's being used to like nourish a person. This is awesome. I love this part. I'm really happy that I'm able to do this. Yeah. And so I was just sort of in that middle ground. Physically, I didn't mind like menstrual cycle, that kind of stuff. I don't care about that. Physically, my body changing, I didn't care too much about that. It was just the emotional roller coaster of going off of hormones and then pregnancy right away. Like it was just a lot.
That must have been like whiplash in terms of like, what? I don't know how I feel. I don't know where I'm at.
Yes. Yeah. I had a naturopath who's in my life say chemically, it's a little bit like being bipolar, like there are going to be high highs, there are going to be low, low, lows. Mm. And you have to really take care of yourself during this time. But I was extremely hard on myself. I was really disappointed at how quick I was to anger, how impatient I felt. I try to be as even keel as possible. And that was hard.
But it was out of your control. So
I know, but I like felt like it should be in my control. Like I'm a grown up. I should be able to deal with this. But,
yeah,
you know.
But it's hormones.
You had a lot of stuff. You had a lot of stuff. Yeah. I mean, every pregnant person gets, you get, what's the word, what's the term I'm looking for? We get to do whatever we want. Like you get to eat whatever you want.
Free
you get
reign?
Free
know.
Reign. Free reign. Yeah. You get like free reign. Like people give you more space.
I know. I just didn't.
Not that it's okay, but.
It's my own thing. I just don't want to be, I don't want to be needy. Like I don't want to be high maintenance. Honestly, a lot of it is internalized transphobia.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like I don't get that leeway.
Yeah.
I don't. Like, I'm already expecting the people in my life to quote unquote, deal with me being trans. Like, I can't also be an asshole.
Oh, that's really, that's really interesting. Like that narrative is maybe buried or maybe conscious or subconsciously either, but like, that's a really heavy narrative. Like that people, like you're asking them to come to you versus just people being there for you. You know what I mean? Like you have an idea that you're asking something of them and then you can't ask more. Like that's a lot.
Yeah. I mean, that's like buried in all of my relationship with my partner.
Yeah.
I already feel like I'm like 80% of a person because I'm trans. It's like, you already have to give up a lot of other things to be with me. I can't like also ask you to deal with more. Cause then I'm like, what, 60% of a person? Who wants to be with like half a person?
Yeah.
Oh, that's tough.
Oh yeah. It's brutal. And then Biff is like, that is so stupid. Just tell me what you need and tell me what Biff. You want. Like that is ridiculous. But I don't think I even realized that that's what I was doing until many years into our relationship.
Yeah, right.
When I would be like, oh, by the way, here's this like thing I want to be different. And Biff is like, oh, I've been doing that for 4 fucking years. Are you kidding me?
You're just telling me.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm like, I know. I'm sorry. It's my thing.
Well, but you always have to remember, right? He fell in love with you.
You know, it does. It feels kind of like the iceberg analogy that like in my mind, it's like he fell in love with like the top part that's visible, not knowing there's all this other stuff underneath. Mm-hmm. That's like, you know, insecurity about my body and my role, like as a gay man, it's like all the trauma from dating in gay male circles and all the things that I had to compromise and give up, all the parts of myself I kind of like had to sand down to be a little bit more marketable to other gay men who weren't trans. Oh yeah. There's like all of that stuff that you cannot see. Part of that is like having your friends ask you questions and like maybe think less of you or have judgment about you for being with a trans person.
Right.
Like those are all things that I'm like, you don't understand. You're going to have to deal with that. You know, you're going to have to deal with the time when I lost my ID on a trip to San Francisco and then TSA like had to spend 2 hours grilling me because I didn't have my ID. But then I also had to be like, oh yeah, and I'm transgender. So when you look me up in the system, you're going to see two different names and two different sexes.
Oh,
yeah. All of those things that you don't think about.
Right.
You know,
right.
You don't think about, or like, I can't go to sex clubs, which my partner would never want to go to. I can't go to nude beaches. I can't change in the men's locker room. Like I can't go to a men's spa just because I'm trans. Like I'm just so self-conscious about my body and then other people, whatever. There's just like so many things that I feel like are under that iceberg. Mm-hmm. So it's like, yes, maybe he fell in love with me, but in my mind, he fell in love with what he could see of me, maybe not totally knowing what else is there. Yeah.
Would be.
Yeah. But the only thing I would say is that it doesn't give him the space to, like, he knows you and he knew you. And I bet he knew so much more of that iceberg than you ever even thought he did.
Totally.
Okay, folks, let's talk BetterHelp. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, if you listen to this podcast, you know Robin and I are huge fans of BetterHelp.
We are. I mean, BetterHelp, if you don't know it, it's an online therapy that's done securely online. And you go to their website, you sign up, and you can start communicating with a licensed pro, a pro therapist, in under 48 hours. How amazing is that?
Oh my God, it's really good. It's not self-help. It's not a crisis line. It is professional counseling. We need this. Everybody needs this. Mm-hmm. There's a broad range of expertise available, which might not be available locally to you, but since it's online, you can access it. And the lady who helped you and I, Robin, Ellen, she was stellar.
Yeah.
She was amazing. I loved her.
And she was exactly what we needed, right?
And she fixed us.
Yes. And I love that it's super accessible, especially during COVID time, because a lot of therapists are all booked up. Mm-hmm. So you can just like log into your account anytime. You send a message to your counselor and you're going to get a timely and thoughtful response. And it's more affordable than traditional offline counseling. And guess what? Financial aid is available.
Which is amazing, which is great. Guys, BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches. So if you don't like the one they give you at first, they make it really easy and free to change counselors if you need to.
I mean, BetterHelp and Jamie and I want you to start living happier life today.
We want you all to be happy. Of course we do.
Yeah.
So go ahead, visit betterhelp.com/OCT. That's better, H-E-L-P. And join the over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help help of an experienced professional.
Yeah, Jamie, and I don't know if you knew it, so many people have been using BetterHelp that they've recruited additional counselors in 50 states.
I actually knew that because they're that big. Okay, so this podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp, and If These Ovaries Could Talk listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/OCT. You said that you have to have really good self-care when you're trans and you decide to get pregnant the old-fashioned way. What did you do for self-care? I mean, I know you just spent a whole lot of time saying you had a hard time with self-care, but what did you do when you came to these moments?
You know, we had a really great moment that I actually don't think, I don't know, I don't remember if it made it in the book or not, but we had a really great moment that I think speaks to why we're great as a couple. When I was having a hard time because I was pregnant, and growing a human is hard work on your body, even if you're not conscious of it, you know? So, and I didn't want to ask for extra dispensation, you know? So I was still like getting up early and taking the train to and from work every single day. And then I had a side gig. So I was like also hustling and like doing extra trainings. And then I would just be so tired and grumpy. And my partner is not like a very like babying person. That's just like not his skill set. And that's kind of what I needed, you know, and I was trying to do all the things. And so finally I was just like, you know, I think I need to scale back a little bit work-wise. I don't know how we're going to deal with it financially. And he was like, look, like, let's not do what we like think we should do. Like, let's do what we actually, like, what are we both good at in this situation? And he was like, what I'm good at is like, I can manage the house. Like I will do the laundry. I will deal with the kids. Like I will do bedtimes. You are good at taking care of yourself. Like give yourself permission to do that. Like take a bath. Take a nap and do not worry about everything else that you're like failing at home. I will step up and do that. And so like you baby yourself, I'll do everything else. And so we just try to like lean into our strengths.
Since we are started to talk about this a little, can you tell us, did like as a man having a baby, was there a backlash? Was that another stressor or was it fine? Like what was that part of the experience like?
Yeah, well, you know, initially we wanted to do it very quietly and basically not tell anyone but our closest in-person physical friends and family about it. And then to just kind of announce at the end, like welcome the newest member of our family. And then maybe people would guess that it was me. Maybe people would guess it was a surrogate, but like, who cares? But kind of early on, we decided we did want to tell our story publicly. And I came to that decision like very naively, thinking that there was not going to be backlash.
Well, because we're living in our bubbles and we're so comfortable in our bubbles. And
yep. And I live in a world of rainbows and unicorns. Like it's my best and worst quality. You know, I really have been so sheltered and so shielded from the world, both by my own privileges and by my family, you know, growing up and living in Portland. Yeah. And so when we decided to tell our story publicly, that's when the backlash really came, and it was fierce, it was brutal, it was uncompromising, and it was disgusting.
And it happened while you were pregnant.
Yeah.
Was it like social media trolls? Was it mail? Like what happened?
Yeah, it was all the social media stuff. It was all the like direct messages, comments. People would share my story, and then like the first whatever 20 comments would be just really disgusting things about me, my body, my baby. They're going to call CPS and have our older kids removed from the house. Just like, I mean, really, really, really terrible. Hard. Like, and I had thought like, whatever it is, I can handle it. I've been doing LGBTQ work for decades. You know, I've had hundreds, maybe thousands of conversations with transphobic people face to face. Like that was my job. It was my job to talk to people and change their mind.
Yeah.
That's still kind of my job. It's really hard. And it does, it hits that the rawest nerve, you know, that echoes what the world has told me in many overt and subtle ways, that I am not worthy of being loved, that I am not like good.
Yeah.
You know, that I don't deserve good things. Like that's what the world has told me about transgender people since before I was even aware that it was saying that. And before I was even aware that I was trans, you know, and it's been so much work to pull myself out of that hole, but the hole's still there. You know what I mean? It's so easy for someone to just push me right back in.
Yeah, yeah. It doesn't cover over.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you is like how, like when I read Twitter in general, not even about like us, just like when people say things like die or like just horrific, horrible things, those are the things that make me lose hope and faith in humanity. And I'm wondering how you, because you just, in all the times that we've talked to you, the twice now, you seem so like positive and resilient. So I'm wondering, how did you not go down that, or how did you bring yourself out?
I don't think I have. You know, whenever you learn any hard lesson about life, you know, it's very discombobulating. And for me, like, it's kind of like a pendulum, right? Where I really was very happy-go-lucky and then swung the opposite direction as this new information came into my life. And I was like, oh no, people are despicable. Mm-hmm. And my hope and, you know, what my goal for my own healing over the next 3 to 5 years is that I get to live somewhere in the middle, you know, where like it's both, right? There are people who are really beautiful and wonderful and amazing and awesome, and there is darkness. Mm. Those things can coexist. And hopefully I will emerge with a more nuanced, mature view of the world that's a little bit less Pollyanna than before, but also not like completely bitter and jaded.
That happy ground.
Had a whole visual of you as like a butterfly, like shedding and just coming out again. Like, as I was thinking it, I thought he must have had that same like metamorphosis happened like 5, 6, 7 times in his life, you know, because it's like you just keep going through these huge changes and be coming out new. And I think that's so, I'm so impressed.
Well, the crappy thing about that analogy is the chrysalis.
Yeah.
And, you know, scientists have no clue, none, how that metamorphosis happens. None. Like inside a chrysalis is literally goo. It's
right.
Goo. And they have no clue how the caterpillar disintegrates and then reemerges as a butterfly. Like, we don't know how that happens.
Yeah.
And so that's why it's a crappy metaphor, is because it's like being in the chrysalis, like it can't be fun to just be goo and to not know like am I going to be like a beautiful butterfly at the end of this or what?
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
It's that mystery place. And I do go into this in the book of just like how incredibly hard it was to be bombarded with that many negative messages about myself and to not know how or if I was going to make it out on the other side. And I still have mourning and grieving to do for who I was before. I miss that person who thought that people were good.
Yeah.
That
the
world was safe. I miss that. That was nice.
Yeah.
And still every 3 to 4 months or so, about 4 times a year, some new right wing alleyway of the internet like rediscovers my story or discovers it for the first time as if I am pregnant right now. And then I get all these new notifications of like some new crappy meme that someone made of me as a pregnant person, you know, some new Breitbart, you know, Alex Jones, like went on some huge rant about me when I was pregnant on his radio show, which millions of people apparently listened to. And the like neo-Nazi front here in the Pacific Northwest got a hold of my story for a time. Like,
That's scary.
It just like pops up again and it like happens all over again. And I have to remind people in my life, like, don't send those to me. I do not want to see that.
Yeah, don't send those. Don't send those to Tristan.
I'm just too tender. I can't do it.
But regrets about going public with your story? Like, if you were to go back,
I don't, like, number one, like, I don't do regrets at all because you can't. So, like, what's the point? I can't go back
can't
in time.
Go back.
You know? But I mean, even all of these years later now, 4 years later, I still don't know if I would do it again. Yes, I got a book, but even that, like, at what cost, both to myself and also even for the movement? Was it a net benefit? I hope, but I don't know.
It is a benefit. It is a net benefit because your story being told is hopefully, like, we're just, maybe you move the bar even a tiny bit. I don't know.
I want to serve the movement. If I get a microphone, I'm like, cool, how do I turn this into like 50 microphones? I talked about transgender women of color on every single interview I did. I talked about anti-trans hate crimes on every single interview I did because I care about intersectionality. I'm trying to serve the movement. I want to make the world a better place for trans people.
Well, listen, I, for one, I'm really happy you are here for the movement and you are speaking out and you are here. And God, if people knew, well, now people do that are listening to this episode, how much work goes into this? How much work goes into trying to just move that needle just a teeny tiny bit towards acceptance, towards love? It's just insane how hard it is. It breaks my heart, but I am so glad you're here doing the work.
Thank you.
But not just the work, like, yes to what Jamie said, but also like that you're there for those two kids that you took in. and that you're there for this child that you just had. Like the family you're creating, the intentionality you're creating, not just for the movement, but for your family. We need more of you. And anybody who says differently can fight me and Jamie in the schoolyard at 3.
Kick their butts.
I will. Jamie will cheer.
Yeah.
Tristan, tell people the name of the book, where they can get it, and where they can follow you and just all of your amazingness.
Everybody needs to go buy this book right
immediately.
Now.
Yes,
the book is called How We Do Family, and you should buy it from an independent bookstore near you.
Indie bound.
Yeah, and then when you're done reading it, pass it along to somebody else so that hopefully more people hear the story. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then my partner's name is Biff, and so online we are at Biff and I, B-I-F-F-A-N-D-I on Instagram, Facebook, blah, 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 all the places. Technically, I'm on Twitter. I just hate Twitter so hate much. It. You mentioned me Twitter, Robin. I can't do it. It's not meant for people
Twitter.
Like me. Get it.
This has just been lovely.
You said so many things that just really, I think, opened up our eyes to things we have never talked about and just
seriously
what you went through in your process. And I'm so glad you shared with us and everyone.
Thank you.
Tristan. I love me some Tristan. I love me some Tristan.
I want to go to Tristan's house and have lunch or dinner. I don't know why I feel said like lunch.
I know, lunch and dinner, like you're staying all afternoon. They went through so much.
I know.
Like Instaparents and just, you know, the trauma of the trolls.
Trolls, really, everybody, go away. Go away, trolls.
I know. What's heartbreaking is how they just keep resurfacing for him. And that's hard. That's hard.
Like, just let people be, like, stop, trolls.
I know. But he came out of it thoughtful and wanting to do more for his community. He is truly inspirational. 100%. And everybody should get his book, mm-hmm. How We Do Family.
Yeah, go get that book. You can get it.
And speaking of books, Jamie, while you're getting Tristan's book, also put our book
you
in the cart.
You should get the bundle. Like, get a bundle.
Yeah.
Just put bundle both books in the cart.
Yeah.
You know.
Let's make a bundle with Tristan. Let's call it, you get the book, If These Ovaries Could Talk, The Things We've Learned About Making LGBTQ Family. You can get it at all major retailers. And if you want to buy locally, you check IndieBound.
Yeah, and get Tristan's book at the same time. And then if he has an audiobook, get both our audiobooks together.
Yep.
Yeah. That's all available on iTunes.
All
you can
them.
Bundle this. You
all
can bundle this shiznit.
Yeah, bundle it. Bundle it.
Bundle it.
Jamie, we have an exciting news up next on our live stream.
Yeah.
So people know we do these live streams every mm-hmm. Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern. So we've got our first season 8 live stream coming back. It's not really season 8, but
no,
I'm just going to
like
call
season
it
season 3 for the live stream. A live stream for people like my mom who might not know. It's like we're live on Facebook and we do a video and you can come in and chat with us. It's fun. It's very
yeah,
fun.
Ask questions mm-hmm. to us and our guests. And sometimes it's just us chatting and sometimes it's got guests. Mm-hmm. And this week on 9/16, Kendra and Claire Vo Ocampo, they're joining us. And they wrote this delightful kids book called Mighty May Won't Cry
mm-hmm.
Today.
It's all about the first day of school and emotions. And there are two moms, but that's not the focus, which is important. It's just part of the story. This child just
love
happens to have two moms, but it's a first day of school story. And
yeah.
I'm super excited to read this
yeah.
book to my kids. My 3-year-old who's about to start pre-K.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you want to hear more about it, come watch the live stream, ask questions. And then if you miss it, if you're not available for an Eastern, watch it on YouTube.
Anyway, that's Jamie. Happening.
Tell people how they can get us on the social.
Okay, I will. We're going to keep this conversation going, folks. We are all over the social. We are Ovaries Talk on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And If These Ovaries Could Talk on YouTube. You can also support the podcast and join our wonderful and beautiful and rainbow community on patreon.com/ovariestalk. And that's where you're going to get that bonus content and the videos of the episodes, which is always a win.
Absolutely. And thank you to our sponsors, KiwiCo, BetterHelp, and California Cryobank. We couldn't make the show without you all.
We really couldn't.
A huge thank you to all of our Patreons. And you are helping us make this show too. We thank you.
We thank you from the bottoms of our heart. We thank you.
From the bottoms of our hearts.
We thank you. And Helen thanks you too. She loves you
too. She'll be back next week. Helen's coming back next
Patreon
week.
Patreon just basically like funded her vacation that she didn't tell
us
she was taking.
I don't want to say she's taking money out of the account, but okay. All right, let's go find Helen. Eggs, Jamie.
Ovaries.
Out.
If our ovaries could talk, they would say, eggs, ovaries, out.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.